Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Penny, who is here with us to talk a bit more about water at the monastery and our deepening efforts to work on sustainability in terms of water. Welcome, Penny.
Thank you, Jen.
So I thought maybe we'd start by setting the context of kind of how it's been something that's been on our list for years, but for various reasons is being bumped to the top of our list.
Well, yeah, in California we are in the middle of a major drought, and it apparently is the third year of the drought, which I hadn't really realized. And so we've had a number of conversations of late to talk about all the different ways we can continue, increase, and add to how we save water.
Yeah, that it's something that we've actually I bet you in terms of if you looked at the average, you know, same amount of acres and people and all that stuff, we probably just use an absolute fraction of the water of kind of the same equivalent of, you know, anywhere else in the United States. But we've always wanted to deepen that. And, yeah, as you say, there's really been motivation to do that. And I think one of the things that we realized in that conversation is, you know, even if it started raining tomorrow and just poured rain for the next many months, well, really it's kind of been a gift that it's really inspired us that we want to put the energy and attention and care and love into it that we've always wanted to do.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking that when you first come to the monastery for any retreat, in the opening orientation, one of the first things you learn is when you go into the dining room, you go into the kitchen to wash your hands, you turn on the water, you get your hands wet, you turn off the water, you soap them up, then you turn on the water just to get them, you know, rinsed off, then you turn off the water. So as long as the monastery has existed, being attentive to all resources has been a part of the way that it's the practice. It's the way the practice operates. Don't leave things dripping. Don't leave lights on. Just because it's not only a matter of energy and water. It's a matter of being attuned to all the resources we use and are so easy to take for granted.
You know what I love about that, Penny, when you said that, I almost got goosebumps, is that, you know, you come to the monastery, maybe you're brand new, you go in that orientation, and I certainly didn't realize it the first time I was sitting that orientation, but from the first start of that orientation, that is Zen. That's what, you know, and it can feel like, okay, yeah, let's get the logistics out of the way so that then we can go meditate and we can have group discussions and we can get on with this enlightenment thing. But that is Zen. You know, that turn on the faucet, get the water that you need, turn it off. If you need light, turn it on. When you don't need it, turn it off. Not deprivation, not, you know, it's everything you need and not more.
Yeah, you know, it's another version of leave not a trace. You know, it's a part of why we do this is because we're not the only beings on this planet. We're not the only beings on this piece of property. And so we need our share in order to flourish here, and so does everything else, all the other critters, all the other plants. And so how do we share, because we are all connected, how do we share everything we use so that every other being also has access?
Yeah, exactly. You know, we're blessed with, as far as we've always been told, a very good well. But I think that's such a great point that you can't look at it from that, well, it's, you know, we have a really good well, so what do we have to, but our water, of course, is coming from the same place that everybody else's water is coming from. All the other human beings, all the deer, the, you know, everyone, we're all pulling from the same water source. So it is really inspiring. So I wonder if we might talk a little bit about what some of those efforts are.
Well, for the last 2 years, I believe, water that is used in dishwashing in the kitchen is poured through a strainer into 5-gallon buckets on the back porch, and then those are hand-delivered to individual shrubs and trees all over the property so that none of it is wasted. All of it is recycled in the form of watering. The food is composted and put through a disposal and collected and put on the compost. And we've paid a special attention this year to mulching, composting, mulching, trying to make the soil as absorbent and spongy and protected as possible, so we're using less than we ever have. And then we've also talked about trying to capture rainwater, which we haven't done before, but the capacity of the buildings, even just the little outbuildings all over the property, is enormous.
Yeah. Tell us those, I don't know if you have them at the tip of your tongue, but those statistics were phenomenal that you worked up.
Well, there's a formula that you can use to determine how much rainwater your particular area of roof could conceivably produce. And I took the average rainfall in this area and reduced it. I think I'd have to reduce it more now because we're so in drought. But just looking at little buildings like the cellar, the chalet, the offices, the workshop, I calculated a while ago that we could collect 35,000 gallons in a typical winter.
That is phenomenal. That's amazing. And so one of the things, of course, now we're working on is storage, what you do with the water. And so Penny mentioned that, I think it was actually your brainstorm, if I'm not mistaken, a couple of years ago where you said, you know, I think you were down here working with us, doing working meditation, then realizing, you know, there's a fair amount of water that we're using in the kitchen. I wonder if we might, and it was so brilliant. And it's the most simple system. I mean, there's nothing to it. It's just, we have these little pieces of paper that just, when it, you move one from the waiting clip and it says the rose, and then you move it to the watered clip, and then you take the, when you go to water, you take the next one. And so it's a really easy, we don't all have to communicate, have you watered this, have you watered that? Very simple, very elegant, very zen. And, but what happens is we've been doing that in the summertime when things, you know, need water. And then when things don't need water, there's been sort of this question mark. It actually started to feel to me awful. Pumping the water down the drain felt somehow just not right. So we've gotten some huge rain barrels, and we're putting the water into those. And just today, actually, we were looking at the system we're going to do for raising it slightly up on a deck. Then we're going to put a filtration system in there, and that's the water we're going to use to water the garden all year round.
And you know what's really wonderful about that, too, is it changes the whole orientation from we live in a dry, droughty area to, my God, we've got so much water. How in the world are we going to ever manage all this water? In fact, you know, it's such a zen thing to move from scarcity to abundance just by paying attention to what's available.
Yeah, that's really beautiful. And so some of the other things are Brian's talked to us about the swales up on the food forest hill, and I think we're doing some swales down here in the garden too.
Yeah, there's a permaculture development in our garden, in the lower part of the garden, and there are places where swales can be built there. The lower part of the garden terraces nicely down, so you can put a swale between one bed and another. It's downhill from there, and then that water will collect and feed the lower bed.
And from what my understanding of it, so I mean, essentially that's rainwater, right? Or, I mean, I suppose you could put your own water in it if you were in drought, but that it releases the water over time instead of all at once.
Yes, it does, and especially because it's filled with brush and debris and that kind of thing that just acts like a major sponge.
So we have a couple of more minutes. There was something else that went through and it went right back out. But were there other things you wanted to talk about, Penny, with it?
Well, what I would love to do is tell people the formula for how you determine how much water you can, because it's such a simple thing and anybody can calculate it. So the formula is that you take the square footage of your house, you multiply it by the average rainfall in your area, which you can get online, and you divide by 12. And what you end up is the cubic feet that your roof area can produce. And there's about 7.5 gallons in a cubic foot. So if you multiply by 7.5, you'll find out how many gallons your roof area could conceivably produce. And my experience always has been it is mind-boggling how much we have no clue how much, again, abundance is available to us, and it's such a simple thing to calculate.
Wow, that is really fun. I can just see Sangha all over getting their calculators out.
And one other thing I just wanted to say, another thing we have done for a number of years is in our vegetable garden beds, we used to hand water, which has its advantages, but it also you're watering the whole bed sort of globally. And about 5 years ago, we switched to something called T-tape, where there are tapes that you lay there that have little holes in them every 8 inches. So they feed the roots of the plant that you plant right there. And our local organic gardener, who's our, sort of our, one of our gurus, says it really just uses a fraction of the water we would otherwise be using.
So that's another tip for people in their own garden.
Yeah.
And you just as we close, Penny knows, we're actually sitting in the garden right now doing this, which is really quite nice. It's beautiful out here. And it just feels like an example of, Sherry's been talking so much recently about how as practice deepens for all of Sangha, and there are so many folks in Sangha who now practice is the central focus of their life, and they're able to step up and give so much back to practice in a way that, you know, the very few people, for example, who live on this property are able to do. And I just feel like the efforts that you're having in the garden, that you're coming down here every week, that you're able to steward, is such a good example of that, of just the practice giving back to practice, basically. So just a lot of gratitude for that.
Well, I have a lot of gratitude for that, too. It's been very fun. And, you know, one of the things that's so crucial to me is it's not like there's practice and there's sustainability. Practice is sustainability of everything we touch and ourselves, and so it is what I love about this, it's not just, as you said, it's not just that now we're in bad rain conditions, so now we're going to pay attention to water. We live within a context, and practice always keeps us aware of that context, and so this is just deepening practice. It's upping our game around water.
Yeah, that's great. Perfect note to end on. Thank you so much for being with us, Penny.
Thank you, Jen.
All right, Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jen. Thank you, Penny. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
Well, that was a power-packed conversation.
Wasn't it? It really is. It's always a thrilling place to be, that monastery. And this is a particularly thrilling time to be in that thrilling place, because it's really true. We're just there's so much energy. Penny's there in the garden. She's been just stewarding that project for a long time now, and completely faithful. And now we have David, who's joined the team, and the garden is spectacular. And they're bringing something that the rest of us can't make happen, because there's just so much to do on that property.
Yeah.
And so to have that kind of assistance for making these efforts, and Brian doing his part with it, people doing things that, again, the people who are on the property all the time just don't have the time and energy to make happen. But the boost that it gives, those kinds of efforts, the energy that it brings to practice is just extraordinary. So we have project after project after project that they're going forward now because we have the resources to make them happen, and it's a really good feeling. It's that, you know, that taking care of what takes care of us. It's a good feeling.
It's a great feeling. It's a great feeling. And it's wonderful that each of us has our own part to play in that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And I remember you saying that, you know, if I'm not there to play my part, it's lost. It's not there.
Yes. That's right.
Somebody else
can do it. That's
right.
Right. Yep. Yeah, we don't have Michael, so who's going to step in and be Michael?
Right.
No. We don't have Michael. We just don't have Michael.
It's
the end of that.
Yes. I love that, because it shows the importance of the participation of each one of us.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
And
I think that's why, of course, with karmic conditioning, with ego, there's such a focus on people not belonging. You know, there are some really standard stories that people suffer with. One of my favorites is, I hate the sound of my own voice. and another one is not belonging. So why are people so brainwashed with that? Well, you don't fit in. You don't belong. Well, because if you really believe that, you're not going to show up and play your part. And everybody is going to suffer as a result, not just the person believing that story and not showing up and suffering as a result, but everybody suffers the loss
yes.
of that person playing that crucial role.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. In whatever way we participate in practice, no standards.
Yes.
No keeping
no
score.
Standards. No keeping score. Isn't that the best?
Yes.
And
yeah.
you know, Michael, I know we'll talk more about this on Thursday night, but it's so the thing that I think I love about practice more than anything else, and I love interacting with people about, is that we believe these things, whatever they are, that karmic conditioning tells us. We believe them because we've been told them and taught them since before we can remember. It never occurs to us to question it. It's just how it is. It's just real. It's just true. And then somebody sees through it,
mm-hmm.
gets it. You know, something like keeping score. Well,
yeah.
as soon as we stop and look at it, well, there's nothing in life that's keeping score. It's all made up. It's
yeah.
it's just made up, and it lives in people's heads. And they're miserable because they believe that it's true. And then you get to see it's not true. Oh, my God. Then what does that mean? Well, then I can just live. I can just be alive. Oh, my God. You know, I was writing to somebody this afternoon who had one of those epiphanies with, you know, so kind of grappling with, well, what does this mean, and how do you do this, and how do you be in that kind of relationship with a human being, and how do I take care of myself? And then it dropped in. Oh, my God, treat myself the way I treat my cats. Oh, I get it. You know, and in that moment when it drops in, it's so obvious. I know how to be kind.
Yes.
I know how to be loving. I know how to take care of. I do it all the time.
Yes.
Just apply it to the human. Got it.
Got it. Check.
Yeah. Check. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's so exciting. Yeah. All right.
Wonderful.
Well, yeah, I bet you have some things to tell us.
Just a couple.
Okay.
This is the last week to sign up for the Zen of Rumi workshops, celebrating the connection between Rumi's poems and our practice.
Mm-hmm.
Coming up on March 1st in New York City, the Joy and Freedom of Acceptance Workshop with Jen.
New York, New York. Here she comes.
Yes, if you live nearby, or if you don't live nearby, you won't want to miss this exploration of the true freedom of acceptance.
Uh-huh. Going to be exciting. And we learned last week, it's going to be a beautiful place.
Yes, it is. Sounds very much like
it. A good time in a beautiful place. This is good.
Following
what else
that,
you got?
1 week later, on March 8th, our at-home retreat, Practice Drills for Playing the Game.
Mm.
It's available for registration now. You can register for this separately. If you've already signed up for the year-long retreat, you already have a reserved spot for this event.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this is good. If people aren't in the email class, or they haven't signed up for the year-long retreat or whatever, it's set up to be able to follow along and get maximum benefit. That's one of the things we're really working hard on this year, is realizing that people are doing a lot of different things, participating in a lot of different ways, and we don't want to leave anybody behind because they missed the part on that. So facilitators and all of us, we're really focused on, we make it everything complete in and of itself.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Wonderful.
Yeah.
All this and more at schedule.livingcompassion.org.
Mm-hmm.
Our call-in number today is 888-4-SANGHA. That's 888-472-6442. The show ID is 15406, and then your PIN followed by pound. One topic, please, in about 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you. Here we go. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hey there, Sherry and Michael. This is Sherry in San Francisco.
Hi. Well, how are you?
I'm doing just fine. How are you guys doing?
Good, good. Having a great time.
Yeah.
Loving the email class. I got to tell you, I am loving the email class. It does keep me out of trouble. You know, there's not a lot of extra time in the day because people are really staying with the class and participating full tilt, as far as I can tell. And I love it. So that's how I am. Michael seems good too. Michael?
Yes, yes.
You're doing good?
Yes.
Yeah?
Great.
Okay. We're good. We're all good.
Well, and it's funny because I too am loving the email class, and I've tried to call in every show, and it's been so popular that it's hard to get on. So that's
yes.
a really good thing.
on the Thursday night show, you mean?
It's been great, and I love how it just does feel like the participation is so high and so enthusiastic.
Yeah, yeah. And we're going to maintain it all the way to December and beyond, through the New Year's retreat and into next year's launch, because that's the kind of people we are.
That is the kind of people we are. Yes, we are. And you know, it's funny because I loved that you and Michael were just talking about not keeping score, because that has just been such a beautiful mantra for me these past few weeks. I'm just loving just that. I mean, you know, it's such a simple thing to remember now.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and I guess what I love so much is it's like, I've gotten the chance to see that conditioning for me so often uses a way of keeping score, and I didn't even realize it to the extent. I knew it was doing
uh-huh.
it, but yeah, so I love that because it's like this simple way of just saying, no score.
No, right. No, we're not keeping score. Thank you. Yeah, because somebody that I was writing to today noted that the way egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate keeps score is, you know, we're going along, we're doing the best that we can, we're doing a really good job, you know, good people doing a good job, and then it distracts us a little bit, and it's like the old turn back the odometer on the car right
mm-hmm.
before you sell it.
Mm-hmm.
It, you know, it just, when you're not looking, it turns your score back to zero.
What?
So no matter what you've done, next time you look at the scoreboard, you know, and you say, well, wait a minute, I thought you just need to work harder, try harder. Mm-hmm.
That's so true.
So if we just stop playing the game, that game, and start playing the game of life, then it's really not a problem any longer. Well, you XYZ. Well, oh, really? Oh, okay. Because if you're not keeping score, what difference does it make?
Exactly. That's exactly like all of that sort of assessing, you know,
mm-hmm.
assessing. It's like every moment it wants to assess the score. And it's like,
mm-hmm.
no, we don't need to do that. Thanks. Uh-uh. Sorry.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's not much left in that conversation, is there?
No.
If you're not engaging with its conversation about what's wrong with you, the two of you don't have much to talk about.
We don't, because that's all it wants to talk about, obviously, right? So
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And what I love, this is one of the things that, you know, I was thinking about, is that it's like, so, you know, I love it in our practice. It's like there's constantly new language to kind of keep us, like, you know, I used to say, like, no assessments. You know, I can remember that. But it's like, you know, that kind of gets, not that it gets old, but I sort of, conditioning somehow takes it over, or I forget, but it's like
yeah.
when there's fresh language, it's all new again.
Yes, yes. It's the hardest thing, Sherry. It's the hardest thing for us to get. In fact, I would say it's impossible, and it's the reason that epiphanies are such a great deal, or in Zen, you know, things like awakening experiences, because we cannot wrap our heads around, our conditioned heads around, the fact that every moment is new. The entire universe is brand new in every moment. You know, so somebody like me says that, and everybody goes, oh, yeah, wow, yeah. But we don't believe it. We don't get it. Because when I sit around, here I am in my little house, and I look around, well, this is how my little house looks all the time, right? But between this moment and the last moment, everything in it has changed. The fact that I can't tell that doesn't mean it hasn't happened. So the illusion of sameness keeps us in that relationship with karmic conditioning. So if it says, well, you did that and you always have and you're like that, and well, if I actually got it, that the person I am now actually has nothing to do with the person who was here a moment ago. All of that would be revealed as utter nonsense. Yeah, and it's only maintained, any believability at all is only maintained because the conversation seems so nonstop.
Yes. Yes, and I love that, because I just felt this tremendous, like, like I could breathe 1,000 times deeper when you were saying all of that, and I just saw that it's like the not keeping score is just, it is a way of reminding myself that it's a new moment, you know,
yes.
Because yeah, there was nothing else, there was nothing before this. What are you talking about?
Yes. Yeah, and so keeping score, like with a football game or a baseball game or something like that, that is so emblematic of that illusion. So we overlook everything that's different. We create this length of time. We have these activities in this length of time, and these things happen. We tie them together. We believe in their relationship. We make them mean X, and there we have it. So we do that with a football game or a baseball game or a soccer game or whatever it is, and it's representative of what goes on inside us in conditioned mind, only we do it with a lifetime.
Yes. Relationships,
so
job,
we can imagine,
career, yeah.
Yeah, if we could imagine that there's a baseball team that started out in, 1960, and they're still playing today, we would have a sense of how not the same things are.
Yeah.
But we keep getting a new crop of young players, and so the illusion is of sameness is maintained.
Wow.
Did you track on that one?
It totally did. I just love. I mean, again, it's like this new metaphor, it's just so helpful. Like, it's so easy then to apply to the different pieces of my life where conditioning wants me to think. You know, they're, like when you said that, especially about the relationships, where it's got me believing there's actually a relationship going on between things that there's absolutely none.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, hey, well, yeah. my 5 minutes is way up, and I'm going to let some other callers on, but thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Great talking with you. Take good care.
Yeah, you guys too. Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome.
Bye, guys.
Good night.
Bye.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Sherry. You're listening to Open Air. Sherry, we're going to hear from our sponsor, and then we'll be back on the air.
All right.
What if you lived with your soul as your pilot? What skies would you fly? How wide would you open? What would you sing if you gave voice to your beautiful heart?
This great song by Trish Rexford Culligan invites us to give voice to our hearts. Simply Celebrate offers you a variety of ways to express your heart. And one of those is by celebrating the people you love. Our one-of-a-kind customized celebration books are like magic mirrors that reflect all of the laughter, adventures, and delight that friends and family share. Clients tell us that this is the best gift ever. Give voice to your heart and give a gift of love that lasts a lifetime. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Welcome back to Open Air, and we have another caller, Sherry.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Good evening, Sherry. Good evening, Michael. This is Claire.
Well, hello, Claire. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay, thank you.
Good. What's going on?
So the process of, you know, I get it, but I just can't do it.
I get it, but I just can't do it?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
For instance, with that not keeping score, it's like my initial conditioned reaction is how outrageous that notion is, because for the conditioned part of me, it's like so crucial to meet certain standards. But then, I get it, though, that there's another way. But then somehow I don't know what happens, but I get anxious. It just doesn't happen.
Uh-huh. So I think we've talked about this before on this show, but I know we were talking about it last Thursday night at the monastery, where some of us have started this little game. You know, there's the calendar and there's the smiley faces and the hearts and the stars and all of those things that we loved as children and probably most of us actually never got, because, you know, the really great kids got the stars on their papers and most of us weren't those. So now, of course, we can have those things because we can go get them for ourselves and put them on when we want to. So the point of this is that having things that you want to do because you want to do them. So I have a lot of things that I want to do every day of my life, and I do most of them every day. Sometimes I can't because of circumstances, and sometimes I can actually do way more than I had planned on doing. And I like to look at what I want to do to support this human being in this life. So there are things that I've agreed to do, for instance, an email class that I've agreed that I'm going to write responses to, and there's interacting with the folks at the monastery and all of those kinds of things. So that's all part of my job description as this human being in this lifetime. And then there, you know, I want to meditate every day, and I want to blah, 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 whatever those things are. I want to exercise, I want to eat well. Okay, so I want to do all of those things, and I want to support myself in doing them. But here's the thing, Claire. They don't mean anything. Okay? So when I love the young parts of me, love getting those smiley faces and those stars and that sort of thing, and I find that I will actually make extra efforts. Sometimes I'm out exercising in the dark because I want to complete that part of the program that I've agreed that I want to do. But I'm doing it for me. I'm not doing it because I'm meeting standards that are held out by a voice in my head.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's the difference. So if I do something that I said I wanted to do and I complete it, it's a happy moment. If I don't do something that I wanted to do, it's not an unhappy moment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What I've been noticing of late is that whenever I'm doing anything, no matter what it is, the voice is always telling me that I should have done this thing sooner. Always.
Sooner. You should have done it sooner.
Should have already done this thing. Should have already done
uh-huh.
it. And I was working today with that, with the recording about choosing peace and calm. And I just thought, there's a part of me just gets so anxious, so many body sensations around just kind of like, being here and doing this thing and not being hounded by the you should have done this sooner place.
Uh-huh. So you're seeing it kind of as a package deal, right? So the voice says that, and you believe it on some level, and you feel anxious. You feel those mm-hmm. nervous sensations, and then that means that the voices are right. And there's the illusion, tell mm-hmm. me if this is true, that if you did what the voices said, you wouldn't feel that way.
Yes. Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah. If I had done this thing sooner, but I don't know how I could have possibly have done this thing sooner.
Yeah, that's just it. And that's the secret to the whole thing, Claire. That's the secret to the whole thing, is breaking that relationship.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because it's not true. And so here's my encouragement. And that is to change the focus. So if somebody, was standing outside your house and periodically they yelled fire, mm-hmm. the first time they did it, of course, would be, near heart attack time, right? Because you would of course believe it. Why mm-hmm. would anybody yell fire if there weren't a fire?
Mm-hmm.
And depending, if you're asleep, if you're busy, if you're caught up, if the voice sounds really legit, it still might cause a start. But you wouldn't have to have that experience very many times before you realize that message is bogus, and you wouldn't need to have that physical, you wouldn't have that physical reaction to it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Is this true?
Yeah, so it's just a practice of staying with it and telling myself again and again that it's bogus. Turn the attention away from that and to address the task at hand.
That's right. And what you're training yourself to do is to calm the body. So now the relationship between that message and the sensations in the body, it sounds like it's just knee-jerk,
mm-hmm.
right? And here's the other thing that occurs to me for you to look at. It's not just that message. There are other messages that I suspect are there along the lines of, you need to hurry. You need to hurry. There's too much to do, and you're not getting. You need to go faster. You should have done that already. Is one piece of it, but it's a constant conversation, right?
Because I should have done it before, and that means I got to work even faster to get it done now. Before.
Yes, and so that constant conversation is fueling the anxiety. So, as I bet you know, there is no answer to this other than don't give it any attention.
Mm-hmm.
Because as long as it has your attention, then it's gonna keep doing that. So, getting attention off of that, training yourself, whether you can listen to the message through your ears actually, or you're learning to say it in your head as a mantra, if you can't walk around with the earbuds in all the time, but redirecting your attention, as you said, to choosing peace and calm, that's
that's the only way out of it that I know of.
Well, thank you for your support. Continue to support.
And the thing about it is, don't give up, because that's what it wants us to do. So we talked about this, I think it was on a Thursday night show a couple of weeks ago, where you're going along and you're doing what you're doing, and then it gets you to look to it to get an assessment about how you're doing. Okay, and it tells you you're not doing that well, and then that's discouraging. Mm-hmm. So that's another cycle that it can get us caught in.
When you talk about that, I see that I've been doing that to myself too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's doing it to you. So it's constantly directing the attention to this story, to that story, to the next story, to back to that story, to that, and you're going along with it. So there really isn't a way around this other than training your attention to be where you want it to be. Now, if you can listen to the messages that help you calm down, so messages rev you up, opposite messages can calm you down. You're practicing keeping your attention with the breath so that you're breathing long, slow breaths. That calms the system down. You're doing all of these things, and you're not believing that there are any standards. You're not keeping score about how well you're doing, how often you get talked into this other way of being. Okay, there's none of that. It's just a steadfast, that one of my favorite haikus is, "Climb Mount Fuji, O snail, but slowly, slowly." All right, so that's us. We're like little snails climbing Mount Fuji. And if we get caught up in how high that mountain is and how long this is going to take, we will quit along the path, right? But if we don't, if we just stay focused on our desire to liberate this human being from suffering, then we just keep going.
Keep going. Mm-hmm. Knowing that where I am right now is perfect for me to take the next step.
That's right. That's right. And you couldn't take that next step from anywhere but where you are, which makes the whole thing perfect. And by the time you work your way through this, there will be nothing that will be able to make you anxious or be able to control your attention. When you work through this whole thing, you'll be free. And that's what we're going for.
You've got so sorry. Thank you.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Claire. You're listening to Open Air. And we have another caller here, Sherry.
Excellent.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. This is Rachel from Maryland.
Hi, Rachel. How are you doing?
Oh, hanging in there.
Hanging on. All right. What's going on?
Well, I have a very large bundle of beliefs, uh-huh. and conditioning seems to have a death grip on me with them.
Uh-huh.
And it has to do with messages and stories that I can't trust people, and if I'm not careful, people will take advantage of me, they'll exploit me, that society is a selfish, and they are all about the bottom line and profits at any cost to the planet or people. And, well, it just keeps going.
I got a feel for it. And you know what? We can't really argue with that, can we? I mean, egocentric karmic conditioning is a slippery character,
mm-hmm.
right? And the Buddha himself pointed out that greed, hate, and delusion are what fuel this world of samsara. So you know, we don't want to say, well, there's just no truth to that whatsoever. Nor do we want to say, this is a story worth repeating all day long, every day of a person's life. Right? Because it's not.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know that. Okay, good. Thank you. Thank you. I understand that. Yes, it is important for a person to be awake. Right? A person is well served by being aware,
mm-hmm.
present, paying attention. That's absolutely true. And that puts a person in the very best position not to be hoodwinked or taken advantage of or talked into doing unfortunate things. But living in a story about how bad everybody is and what's going on and what's going to happen is the way people are talked into the unconsciousness that makes them a very likely target for the very things that that story is talking to them about.
Okay.
Can you sort of see that?
Yeah, it's trickling in.
Yeah. So the person who's lost in a story about how dangerous the world is much more likely to walk out in front of a bus
Mm-hmm.
than a person who is there in their body paying attention, aware of everything that's going on around them.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so it's our intelligence in the form of that which animates us when we're present with life. That's our best shot at bringing as much as we can to the party.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why those voices want to keep us in a constant conversation about what's not going on here and now.
Okay, yeah.
So it robs you of your life by pretending to be taking care of you.
It definitely does that, and it sends me into a lot of reactions and gut-wrenching feelings. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which it loves, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We have a sense of how much it enjoys that suffering that we're doing. It's not doing, right? We're
yeah.
doing.
Yeah.
Because it's constantly putting us into that position. Sorry, what you were just talking about with Claire, right? It's
mm-hmm.
just constantly fueling the suffering because, of course, that's what it lives on.
Mm-hmm. And would you say that all of the reaction of such an unjust world and I'm a victim and I all these instances in my past of getting bullied and yada, that's all part of the story?
Oh yeah, that's how it keeps you stuck. Sure, I was looking at that while I was writing about it. Of course, as I keep saying, that whole, again, one of those stories that it catches us in. We don't know what somebody else is needing to go through in order to wake up and choose compassion. We don't know that, right? So we look at somebody who's had, you know, a lifetime of poverty and or deprivation or whatever. And, of course, as Buddhists, you know, we do tend to look at lifetimes, not just a lifetime. And by God, they know that if they had a bunch of money, they would be okay, right? The whole focus is, get me enough money so that I'm safe, so that nobody can do anything to me, so that, you know, I'll never, Scarlett O'Hara, you know, I'll never be hungry again. Well, you can't very well tell that person that they're wrong, because we know that being told information that we haven't experienced for ourselves is pretty useless.
So by the time the person goes through having all the money in the world and everything that money can buy and finding out that they're still not happy, well, then they might be ready to look at something different.
Uh-huh.
So we don't know what somebody else is experiencing in their lifetime, on their path. So we don't worry about them. But the thing about it is that if you stay stuck in a story that you're a victim, then you don't get to have your life. So somebody somebody bullied you and made you a victim back then somewhere, and you're still suffering over it.
Mm-hmm.
So they do one act of villainy against you, and they manage to keep you in a place of suffering for a whole lifetime. That's really too much to give them.
Yeah. And in terms of my sense is, because these stories have a pretty strong grip and have had on me for quite some time. So does it seem kind of just again redirecting the attention and stop dropping and breathing and all those same tools that we use to keep on.
And there's one more, Rachel. Would you say, how would you describe your life now? I mean, do you have enough to eat?
Yes.
And do you have a place to live?
Mm-hmm.
And is the place you live your choice?
Yes.
It's not a tenement somewhere?
No.
No. Do you have a job?
No, I just got laid off.
You just got laid off. Okay, so
yes.
You have had a job. You're looking for another job.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And so when you do you have an education?
Yes.
Okay. So that would be my best encouragement to you. Not to just try to drop the story and kind of come back to nothing or come back to the breath, but really start focusing on what you do have.
Okay.
That gratitude is the fastest
gratitude.
Way. Huh?
Back to gratitude.
Yeah, yes,
yeah.
Because gratitude is the fastest way to open the door to abundance. Yeah? So when you realize how much you have, it's really difficult to feel like a victim. And that's what you want to go for.
Okay.
Right? And that's the thing that will begin to turn those stories around. The only thing depriving you is those vicious voices in your head that are trying to keep you stuck away somewhere as a constant source of energy for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so the process is to focus on life, how much you've been given, how much you've received, how much there is to receive and to enjoy. And you begin to see what a lucky human being you are. And that's what begins to remove the grip that those voices have on you.
Great. That's just...
Can I tell you something else before you go?
Yes.
So I didn't like my father. And I think, as an adult, I could see that he had a lot of problems that I can be very grateful I didn't have in my life. But I didn't like him. And I don't think he was a very nice person, and he wasn't very nice to me. And so the thing that he provided for me in my life is a beautiful role model of how I never wanted to be. Okay? So those people in your life who treated you the way they treated you did you a great service by showing you how you never want to be. And for that, we can thank them.
Yes.
Okay.
Great.
All right.
Vive Gachot.
To you, too. Take good care.
Thank you, Sherry. Thank you, Michael.
Good night.
You're welcome. Thank you for joining us, Rachel. Wow, that was powerful, Sherry, what you said at the end there.
Mm.
Makes gratitude kind of all-encompassing.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. As we get it, that everything is a gift, whether we can see it right now in the moment or not. Mm-hmm. The thing we can trust is, one day we will see what a powerful gift it is, especially the things we think we don't like and don't want.
Wow. Wow. That's a great con for all of us. Seems
like. Mm-hmm. It is.
Okay, good. We're going to hear from our coaches now, Sherry, and then we'll be back.
All right.
The year of deepening practice has produced a new support opportunity for people of all levels of practice. A team of Zen awareness coaches guided by Sherry Huber, who offer individual coaching to support awareness practice. This coaching program is designed to help strengthen the inner voice of self-compassion and peace, and places a special emphasis on recording and listening. Whether you're brand new or a long-timer, awareness coaching can be the extra support your heart desires. As the Buddha said, we must each work out our own salvation diligently. Zen awareness coaches can assist you wherever you are in your practice. For more information, visit sanghamarket.com. Look for the Little Zen Monk under the Services section. These services are offered with loving kindness to support those wishing to deepen their practice.
Welcome back to Open Air, and we have more callers, Sherry.
Right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
This is Debbie.
Hi, Debbie.
Hi. How are you, Sherry?
Good. And you?
I'm good.
Good. What's going on?
So, I was thinking about I was sure I was going to get on right after you gave that quote about climb Mount Fuji, but oh, slowly, snail. Or can you say it again?
Yes, climb Mount Fuji, oh snail, but slowly.
But slowly.
Slowly.
So today, our daughter started. Started to walk for real, and like it was incredible. Like from the difference between 12 noon and what was happening at like 4:30 was amazing. It was just amazing. It's amazing. It's amazing. And
I remember that. I remember that. In fact, I'll tell you. Appreciate this. Her father and I were both there when our daughter took her first steps, and we both started yelling. And scared her so bad she didn't try it again for a week. Oh,
well, you know, that's
very
the thing.
Excited.
That is what was so interesting to me is that, like, she started taking steps last week. You know, she started taking steps and not taking steps and standing and not standing. And, you know, there was no... She was so not in a hurry. She, you know, there was nothing in it for her. Like, it was just, you know, sometimes she would do it and sometimes she didn't, and it just didn't matter.
Right. No scorekeeper.
And that's how it happened. And that's the way it went, you know. Like, she would walk a little bit when she wanted something and forgot she was standing. But there was no hurry. There was no aim or goal or... anything. It was.
Yeah. It's such a lesson,
isn't
it?
Fabulous.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yes. I mean, she's just one lesson after another. I mean, everything I ever read about with spirituality and all that stuff, it's all about human development and this relationship. It's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
It's been remarkable. And I just knew I'd get on today because we got on when I, you know, we talked to you when she was born from the hospital, and I was hoping to get on tonight because she started walking today.
Yeah. We're gonna at
that's
the time we're gonna mark all of her major transitions.
Maybe.
How old is she now?
She's a year and change. She's about a year and a month.
All right. It's so fun, isn't it?
It's great, and you know, she's been a big talker. So yesterday we just hit record a couple times because she can make so many, she has so much fun with sound, you know, so that's what's going on with her.
Yeah, tie it in with what all of us are doing, she's just living.
Yeah, yeah.
And we can really see with little people like that, that life is living her.
Yeah.
Right? We can see,
so,
we can
Well, the other thing that's happening at the same time, like, I think that's been very true, but, like, I've also been able to watch the, like, preferences forming. You know, like, now she can point to what she wants, and she can let me know when she doesn't, when she wants something, but obviously I can't explain to her why she can't have it, but you know, she gets upset if she doesn't have it. Like, this is kind of brand new. It's new. It wasn't that way. Even like a week ago, it wasn't like that. Not real. Not exactly. Not the same strength. It's changing.
Yes. And you can watch. We talk about it as life dropping in. Right, so we have insights, awarenesses, stuff occurs to us, and we talk about it as it just dropped in, because in one second it's not there, and then the next second it occurs to you, and you know you didn't think of it, because it doesn't, there was no volition, it just appeared, right? And you can watch, you can watch it appear in her, you know, that you can, you can watch how something's not there, and then it's like it dawns on her, and she sees that thing, and she wants that thing, or whatever it is. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the other thing go ahead.
Well, if we could recognize that process in ourselves, but we're so caught behind beliefs and assumptions about how things work, and about what ego identity is, and agency, and volition, and autonomy, and all of those kinds of things. If we could just watch how much more like her we are than like we've thought we are, we would see a great deal about how life works, and about this, the way we're talking about it now in the email class, this whole no scorekeeping.
This whole what? Right?
No keeping score. No, that there's no.
Yeah.
It's just. This is just what's happening now.
Yeah. That's all there is. That's all there is for her. And that's all there is for us. Right. It just seems everything that we're doing with practice is to become little hers or little baby.
Yes. Well, I always like to point out at this juncture that Jesus said you must become as little children.
Yeah.
So we have the advantage that we can, and this is part of what we were talking about with Rachel, although this point wasn't made this clearly, that what we can have is the innocence, the recognition of defenselessness and the trust that comes with that of a little child, while having the intelligence to actually be aware of and take advantage of everything that is available to us.
Yeah,
it's a beautiful combination, right? It's not either or. We would want for her to learn to
to understand, to see how things work, to without losing her ability to be present with a fresh, open, new perception, sweet, innocent.
Yeah.
That would be our
and able to do a little bit more than is good for her, which I think stays
able to
through our lives.
Say that again.
Able to do a little bit more than is good for her.
Uh-huh. I don't quite know what that means.
Well, in other words, like she doesn't totally understand how things work. She sees from a limited perspective, just like we do, and she can physically do more than would necessarily serve her best interest. And I think
yes.
that is something that is, you know, I mean, even like the commitment to meditation, where you just carve out some time where you're not doing anything.
Yes, yes. And so
I'm using you
because
I didn't meditate today.
We would want her to learn to be present and aware and intelligent, but not to confuse that with a need to be afraid. Yeah? So we definitely want her to learn about things like gravity, but then not spend her life being afraid of falling.
Yeah, yeah, not even, I just sometimes think that, you know, we have capability to do maybe more things than would serve us in one day, or more, just to, how can I say this, I just, the whole notion of being slightly moderate, moderate.
Yes, and of course my way of talking about that is allowing life to lead. That if we're always doing life spinning, then we'll be traveling at the speed of life, and we'll be doing what there is for us to do. And if we're not in the conversation in the head, there's no keeping score. You know, there's no, well, you should have done more, or why didn't you get that done, or now that's, you know, it's just that is what happened. And if we're not fighting it, you know, I don't want to do that, I don't feel like doing that now, but we're just there and present, and life is guiding us through every moment, every action, then we're always in the right place at the right time.
Yes, you know, that's when I think about my own personal practice, Matt, that's something I've been journaling about. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Something I want for myself to experience that more and more.
Well, I would be remiss if I didn't say at this juncture, better than journaling, record and listen.
That too.
Yep, because it's in that conversation that we have the best chance of the clarity that's actually going to change things for us.
You mean recording and listening versus journaling, or
yes.
that conversation? Okay.
Yes. Yeah, recording and
because
listening.
Because of immediacy?
Yeah.
Hearing
and,
it back.
That's right. It's hearing it back. We write about it. We can feel great clarity as we write. But it's really much like talking to a therapist or talking to a friend. You know, we can have a lot of clarity and a lot of insights, but if we don't make it something that is a regular part of our lives, we lose that element of it. And there's hearing it in our own voice that makes it very powerful. And of course, hearing it in our own voice opens us up to hearing the voice of the mentor, and that's the one that really brings it all together.
Mm. Thank you, Sherry.
You are so welcome. Kiss that baby for me, would you?
I will, and thank you, Michael. Thank you both.
Okay, good night.
You're welcome.
Good night.
Good night. Thanks for joining us, Debbie. And the time is 6 o'clock, and I am a lucky human being.
Me too, Michael. I just, how did we get so lucky?
Yeah, I was going to ask you that question myself.
Yeah, well, I think there's just no answer. We just have to say thank you.
Thank you.
So I'll say
it. And do our part and show up, and it's great.
It is. It is. So thank you, and good night. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Thank you, Cheryl.
Bye. Bye-bye.